Well, way to bum everybody out at the beginning of the sermon. But on May 28, 2016, a child fell into a gorilla enclosure at the Cincinnati Zoo. Now, I went back, and that was actually one of the initial reports on CNN, which was hard to find. Now, there are literally, I shouldn't say literally, but there are just uncountable hours of footage of people talking and yelling, and the blame storm began after that, right? Like, you know what happened next. After that day when we first saw that report, oh, that wasn't the end of it. Even though the child ended up being safe and the gorilla, unfortunately, was killed, after that, just this blame storm sort of swept across the nation on social media. And if you hadn't heard about it initially, you certainly saw it on the news with all of the shows where there's like five people around a table yelling at each other. And so over and over and over, we saw all sorts of different people blaming different things, because many people, in fact, blame the zoo. They're like, why would the zoo allow a four-year-old boy to be able to get in with a dangerous animal like the gorilla? I mean, that should be impossible. Here's this enclosure. It's supposed to keep a gorilla in. How come it can't keep a four-year-old out? And there's all these people going, it's the zoo's fault. And they were angry not only at the zoo for allowing the boy to get in, but for killing the gorilla. Sure. And, you know, there's all these people going, hey, maybe they should have tranquilized him, even though they said very clearly the reason why they didn't do that is because they felt like he could still harm the boy after they would tranquilize. But there was just plenty of blame for the zoo. And then other people, do you remember this? And well, you probably do, because it's still going on. Other people blamed the family, didn't they? There was actually a petition going around going, we need to prosecute this family for not looking after their four-year-old. I mean, what kind of family, what kind of mom allows her four-year-old to go into the enclosure with a dangerous gorilla? And then people started digging into their background and like looking at their Facebook page and looking up their criminal record and going, oh, it's the family. Family's fault. Remember that? Like, it's so some people were like, it's the zoo's fault. Some people said it's the family's fault. Other people blame the gorilla. They're like, I've watched a documentary where there was a child raised by wolves in the jungle. I think there was a black panther that was his friend, not the black panthers, an actual black panther. And he met a gorilla. I think his name was King Louie. In fact, it might have been, I'm not sure he was a gorilla, but he seemed pretty nice, a little over the. So there were people who blamed the gorilla, like, why would he do that? And you're like, he's a gorilla. But they blamed the gorilla. And then other people blamed the kid, right? I even heard people, and they're like, this is what happens when kids don't obey their parents. I'm like, well, that's a pretty big leap. But yes, there is some blame, I guess, to blame the kid that he didn't listen to mommy and went down. In fact, did you notice the one lady in the report we saw said, kid kept saying he was going to go into the gorilla enclosure, and then he did it, you know? And so there was just blame. There was blame all around. And then some people, and these were the people that felt superior to everyone else, they go, it's society's fault. We love saying that. We love blame, in 2016 especially, blame the system. We're like, how come people still go to zoos? I mean, like, it's just so barbaric to go, oh, we get to stare at animals, and it dates back to colonialism, and it's mean to animals. And then other people go, no, it saves animals. Because if there weren't zoos, there wouldn't be rare endangered animals still alive. And so, but we blame society. We said, how come society is still into zoos? And how come? You know, even some people said, like, how come people value children over gorillas? I mean, there's lots of children. There's just not that many gorillas. And some days you agree, but you go, but there, it was amazing. And then other people go, no. Society is racist, because if this would have been a white family, no one would have said anything. And so we blame society. It's a blame culture. I've been saying this every week for 4 weeks, but not only is it a blame culture, we blame the culture. I mean, it's just amazing to think back at this incident that happened back in May and go, Harambe the gorilla will always be, or I shouldn't say always, but at least for now, we remember that name. And when we think back to the death of Harambe, what we really think back to, and what it really, I think, illustrates is that blaming is divisive, isn't it? Like, how many arguments happened over this incident that none of us really had any connection to? I mean, think about how divisive that was. The argument, how you know, on Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram or just at work, and people go, no, I think it was the zoo's fault. No, it was family's fault. It was the kid's fault. You know, it's amazing. And what it did, if you look back and you think about it, is... And blaming always does this. It's just another example that it divided people into sort of victims or villains. Because some people said, no, the family is the victim here. They just went for a day to the zoo, and then their child ends up almost losing his life because the zoo was negligent. And others are like, yeah, I mean, and so some people made the zoo the villain and the family the victim, you know, and then other people would flip that around, and there were arguments about this. No, really, if you think about it, the zoo, they're the victim because they have this valuable gorilla, and because this family didn't watch their kid, he goes in and they have to kill the gorilla, and they're getting all this bad publicity, and so there's just argument back and forth, you know, and no, it's the kid's fault, and then others would go, he's the victim. But what happens in blaming, and you can see so clearly in this moment in time, is this blame game we play, this blame culture that we live in, it divides people into these groups, into victims or villains. And it's really unfortunate also, because what happens in that situation is it's this binary choice we have, and it causes us to argue, and it causes us, it's very divisive, but also it's sort of, once we say someone's the victim, it takes all responsibility away from them. You know, because if we're just you and I talking, and probably somebody will accost me afterwards going, hey, I'm a gorilla guy, or hey, I'm for the zoo, or it really was the kid's fault, because these are divisive things, even when we're talking about this incident. But as soon as we say, no, the family is the victim, we go... We take away all responsibility to kind of go, there's probably some responsibility to watch your kid, make sure he's not climbing into. Or once we go, no, the zoo, they're the villain. They're the ones who caused this. We take away sort of their, and go, well, they were harmed by this. They didn't gain anything. And so this binary choice that we create, this either people are either victims or they're villains, really is divisive and dangerous, because it takes away sort of moral responsibility, and it doesn't allow for us to look at people even as humans anymore. Here's another example from this week. I was thinking about the banking scandal. I won't name the branch, but we've got some retirement there, so it kind of bothers me. But the banking, the large banking chain that this week, you know, it was all in the news in the past couple weeks, actually, how they've created millions of phony accounts. Basically, employees of the bank, in order to meet their goals of selling accounts or get a bonus, would create a phony account in the names of customers, and they would use their information, and so they'd go, hey, we opened an account, and it turned into millions of phony accounts, which cost people just millions of dollars in lost, you know, fees and revenue, and they didn't even know. It's sort of identity theft in a situation. And so then the CEOs of these companies went before Congress, and Congress yelled at them, going, it's your fault. And so in the news this week, we sort of heard the story of all these phony accounts, and some people said, oh my goodness, it's the employee's fault. I mean, whoever opened one of those accounts without the person's knowledge, I mean, they deserve to be fired. It's completely their fault. And then others said, what? No, they're just the victims, because it's the system. It's actually the bank's fault, because the bank set up these really high standards of how many accounts they had to open, so we can't really blame them. They're the victims, and the bank is a villain. And then people just argued in Congress, literally, argued back and forth whether they were victims or villains. And the same thing goes on in every area of our life every day in America. And here's the truth of this. We could go through almost every news story, every sort of political fight going on in America, and I would anger all of you, so I won't do it. But we could break it down into this sort of blame game that we play, where people choose victims and people choose villains, and then they just sort of argue back and forth about which is which. But the truth is, this is not just about news stories. This is not just about events that happen. This is about you and I. If we're honest with ourselves, and why not? I mean, it's church, but we should still do that. Like, if we're honest with ourselves, we see our lives through these lens a lot, don't we? We actually see we see our family and our friends and the things that have happened. In fact, some of us this morning, you're right here and you put yourself into one of these categories. Either you would say, no, I'm a victim, Don. You don't understand. Like, these things have happened to me and these villains have harmed me, and you put yourself in that category. And other ones of you this morning, if you tell me your story and you were honest, you would go, well, I blame myself. Like, I look around and everything I see, sort of, I go, hey, I'm the villain here. I'm the one who caused this. In fact, I take credit for things I didn't even cause because I just feel guilty all the time. And so we put ourselves in our own stories and our family, and it's not helpful. But the problem is, as Christians, we're called not to blame. We're called to, in fact, we've been talking every week about this idea that Peter had, this sort of command that he gave followers of Christ, that while we're waiting for God to make everything right, while we're waiting for his final judgment, while we're waiting for heaven to come to earth, that we would make every effort to be found living peaceful lives that are pure and blameless in his sight. And I can't tell you how hard it is, and you know if you've been trying it with me, not to never blame, because we all blame and place blame, but just to blame less is a difficult thing to do, isn't it? If you've tried this at all, if you've thought of this at all in the last month as I have, you're like, oh, I can't believe I do blame them, and I do blame that, and it's so hard not to do this. It's so hard not to create victims and villains and sort of argue back and forth. In fact, a lot of us use our Christianity and our knowledge of the Bible and our morality, all that it does for us is we sort of pick a side and go, oh, that's a victim, that's a villain, and we just enter into the argument instead of being different. And so I thought I would tell you at the end of this series, I think it's actually quite important that we don't just point out problems, we actually have solutions. So I actually have a solution for you today. And it's not a solution from Don, because you would really wonder about it, and I would wonder about it, because I wouldn't trust it. But it's a solution from Jesus. Sort of another option to this idea of just blaming people and picking victims and picking villains and arguing back and forth and sort of this binary choice that we make. And it happens in John chapter 9. John was a very close friend of Jesus, and he went around and sort of took notes, and I'm glad he did, of what happened during the life of Jesus. And he just sort of had this feeling, I think, that someday this is going to be important. And so we have sort of a written documentary of Jesus in what we call the book of John. And I want to read to you just a short statement that Jesus made and a question that his followers had that I think is so valuable to us thousands of years later. So check this out. It's pretty amazing if you think about it. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been blind from birth. Now, listen to the question that these aren't like just some stranger, some rando who walks up. His closest friends ask Jesus this question. Rabbi, teacher, these are his friends. His disciples ask him, why was this man born blind? And notice the sort of possibilities that they give Jesus. Jesus, this is multiple choice. Why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins? Which one is it, Jesus? Now, here's the thing I know about you and I know about me. This offends us. We don't think like that probably today. Now, what they believed, I'll tell you where they came up with this. This wasn't something they were just being cruel. They really believed there was just such a direct correlation in their faith between the blessing of God and, so basically if you were disabled in any way, they would say, well, that's God cursing you. So literally, you did something wrong or your parents did something wrong. If you were rich or if you were some way favored, then they go, well, God has blessed them. So they would literally look at rich people and go, well, God likes them better than us. So it was a total sort of connection between whatever happened in life to they would blame the gods, literally, or blame God. They would go, okay, so this had to be, in their world, you would go, well, this person was born blind, so it had to be either his parents' fault or his fault. Those are the only two options. Now, you and I would go, oh, well, that's offensive. That's victim shaming. I mean, I can't believe they would say that, but we would still have questions, wouldn't they? We would have questions if Jesus were here and we saw someone who's out at, the story goes on that he was begging. This is a guy, back in those times, there's no social safety net either. So literally, because he is blind, I mean, he can't provide for himself other than to beg. So they had sort of grown up watching this poor guy beg to just sustain himself. Now, we probably wouldn't go, if Jesus were here, ask him, like, hey, whose fault is this? Is it his fault or his parents? But here's the thing. We probably have questions. I mean, don't you have questions when you see something like that happening? Some sort of situation where there's no good answer? I mean, why would a child be born blind? We'd probably say, is this because of genetics, Jesus? You know, was it something that happened in his genetics? Or maybe we would say, do you think, Jesus, that there was it tainted water? Maybe they had bad water? Or, like, I don't know, Fruit Loops really are bad for you? Or vaccines, Jesus? What? You know, we would find some corporation to blame, probably. We would go, maybe they were, it's asbestos, thank God. I've seen a lot of commercials on TV, you know. Or, you know, so we would probably try to ask Jesus, like, what was the cause? Because we couldn't imagine this just happened. We'd go, well, there must be some sort of pollutant or problem, or they played too many video games. There's some reason this happened. And maybe even, we'd probably feel sort of sheepish asking Jesus this. But maybe we would even go, Jesus, is this guy really blind? Like, I'm so cynical now. You go, I know people go, well, I'm legally blind. And you're like, but you drive a semi for illegal leaving. How is that possible? You know, so we might even go, like, he's begging, but do you think he's really blind, Jesus? Or what's his angle? You know, so in some way, even today, just like then, I think we would probably, and maybe it's just me, but we would probably wonder, and we'd probably ask Jesus, like, is this guy a victim, or is somehow, could he be a villain in some way? I mean, there's something wrong here. And that's, if you think about it, that's what they were saying. They're going, is this poor guy a victim of the fact his parents did something wrong, which caused him to be born blind? Or is it his fault? Is he just a bad guy somehow, and God knew that, and God punished him? And so it's an interesting moment in time that, just like today, just like we would probably do in our own way, they were faced with this situation where there's no good answer. There's sort of nothing positive that you can imagine coming out of this. And they were, the question that they had is, well, how do we categorize him? Is he a victim or a villain? And Jesus gave them a completely different option, and I want to read it to you because it's remarkable. John 9:3-6 says, it was not because of his sins or his parents' sins. So neither one. He's not a victim or a villain. Jesus said this happened so that the power of God could be seen in him, and we must quickly carry out the tasks assigned to us by the one who sent us. The night is coming. He's talking about the end of his life, which was approaching pretty quickly, when no one can work. But while I'm here in the world, I am the light of the world. Then he does something really strange. Jesus was always finding a strange way to do something. He healed lots of blind people, and he did it differently every time, which I love. I think the idea was he did it differently, probably so we wouldn't go, oh, well, this is a cure for blindness. Because if he would have done it the same way, we would walk around going, what you got to do is you got to spit in the dirt like Jesus did right here, and you put it on people's eyes, and then they wash in the right. But he did it different every time. But notice this time he chose to spit on the ground, and he made mud with the saliva, and he spread the mud over the blind man's eyes, and he said, go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam. And Siloam means sent. And so the man went, and he washed, and he came back seeing. Isn't that remarkable? Like, they're asking, like, who's the victim? Who's the villain? Like, how do we categorize this guy? Now, notice right away, which is interesting, what Jesus did is what no one even considered. You know, no one considered, like, why can't this guy be healed? They're like, well, he's born blind. You know, it's even worse, I would think, like, if you're thinking about this, like, even more remarkable than someone who was blinded. You go, well, maybe his vision could come back. But someone who's born blind, who's never seen anything, I mean, I think that's worst case scenario. So none of his friends, even though they'd seen him do miracles, none of his disciples sort of even thought of this fact. And Jesus goes, well, why don't we just heal him? Why don't we just give him his sight back? I mean, that's amazing. It's sort of like walking into that Facebook argument about Harambe the gorilla and going, hey, did anybody think of healing, bringing the gorilla back from the dead? That'd be great. You know, I mean, that's just not thought of. That's not an argument anyone made because it's impossible. And Jesus went right there. But I want you to notice what he said. He said, the reason for this is so that the power of God could be seen in him. I mean, that's different. It's a brand new category. I mean, sort of the best that we could come up with, that you and I could come up with, is that this guy who was born blind is either a victim, and probably today, because we're pretty soft-hearted, and because of what we know about medicine, we just go, he's just a victim. I mean, he didn't do anything to cause this. His parents probably didn't do anything to cause this. Maybe some faceless corporation did, because we're really suspicious of them. But okay, maybe no one, but still, he's just a victim. That's the best we can come up with. But Jesus had a completely different, just amazing category that no one could have. He said, this is an opportunity for the power of God to be revealed. Like, this is an opportunity. Jesus saw a guy who was born blind, which, oh, what a terrible situation. It's an opportunity for miracles. Now, here's what happened next. And this just shows that as much as we like to think, oh, we're more advanced or we're more like him, we're just like people were thousands of years ago, because the story goes on, and I won't read it to you, but let me tell you very quickly that just immediately blaming and finger-pointing started, because guess what? Jesus healed him on their religious Sabbath day, so you're not supposed to do any work, so immediately they start arguing over, hey, can you do that? Like, I don't know if it's right to heal him. Why didn't he wait until Sunday? Because that would have been okay, but healing him on the Sabbath, that's not right. So they call the guy in, and they're like, hey, are you sure you're the same guy that was healed? And then they call his parents in, and they're finger-pointing, go, it's their fault, or, hey, this is a different guy. This is a scam. Just sort of like what happened today. There's all sorts of skepticism. Some are blaming Jesus. Some are going, and the guy literally, all he says is, all I know. You know, literally, he's about to go to prison for getting healed of blindness. He's like, all I know, I'm just out there begging, and this guy comes along and heals me. What do you want me to tell him? And it's very interesting to read, like, sort of the finger-pointing and the blaming that happens. And through this, Jesus was right. Like, God gets glory because no one can sort of deny that this guy who has always been blind can see. Skip ahead. Jesus kind of circles back to the guy after all of this happens. And I want to read to you what Jesus said to him, because I think it's pretty powerful. When Jesus heard what had happened, when Jesus heard that this guy had been brought before the authorities because he was healed, he said he found the man and he asked, do you believe in the Son of Man? Do you believe I'm the Son of God, basically? Do you believe I am the Messiah? I am the Christ. And the man answered, who is he, sir? I want to believe. I do want to believe in him. You have seen him, Jesus said, and he is speaking to you. Yes, Lord, I believe, the man said, and he worshiped Jesus. And Jesus told him, I entered this world to render judgment, to give sight to the blind, and show those who think that they can see that they are indeed blind. Isn't it interesting that somehow, incredibly, Jesus used this time not only to introduce himself to everyone around him that he was the Son of God, but actually that the best thing that could possibly, in my opinion, happen to this guy happened because the worst thing that ever happened to him. And see, that's a possibility. That's this possibility for the miraculous, the possibility for, as much as our friends say, the reason why I don't believe in God is I see bad things happening to good people. I mean, what kind of God would allow that? Instead, the story of Jesus is that bad things happen to all sorts of people, and God makes good things come from them when we make space for him. And it's interesting because it feels powerful to blame. It really does, doesn't it? It feels like, I mean, think about sort of the wasted hours and the wasted breath that happened, you know, here in America in 2016, like arguing about a dead gorilla that no one thought to bring back to life, I might add. Like, if Jesus were here, that's what he probably would have done. He would have, the healing of Harambe would have been another story. But instead, we argued about the gorilla, and we argued, like, about who's to blame. Is it the parents? Is it the zoo? Is it the kid? Is it society? And it feels super powerless, but it didn't do anything. Nothing has changed since May with all of that blaming, all of the finger pointing, all of the victims and villains that we have created. And it's interesting because it feels like we're doing something, but nothing is accomplishing. But instead, what Jesus said is there's another option. And let me tell you this about that option. It feels very vulnerable. Like, it feels powerful when we can sort of create victims and create villains and go, oh, they did this to me, and it's their fault, and that's why I'm... Or, hey, this is my fault. It's the reason why things are happening is because, man, I'm a bad... You know, either one of those things feels like we're getting something done, but nothing is changing. But trusting God and putting our faith in God feels very vulnerable, and it feels like nothing is happening so many times. And in fact, it feels weak, like this is weak, just trust God in this horrible situation where there are no good answers. But what Jesus set out is that that creates space for miracles. That creates space, and I'm not saying, and notice I'm not going, hey, so if you just won't blame and you just pray, every person will be healed and dead gorillas will be brought back to life and cats will lay down with dogs. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, though, there is a possibility that when you create space and trust God, that he does work in ways that you would have never imagined. And in fact, if you think about it, the best thing that happened to this gentleman is that he actually met Jesus and became a true, we would call him a Christian now, because he said, you are the Christ, and he worshiped Jesus because of the worst thing that ever happened to him. Now, I know that's not a very popular thing to say, and I know that it sort of sounds, oh, that's spiritual, and that's nice for you, Don, and yeah, I get it, you know, don't blame others, and sort of trust God, but here's the thing I love about being a follower of Christ. It's one thing for Jesus to sort of say, hey, the fact that you're blind, the fact that this guy had the worst thing possible happen to you, the fact that this poor guy, we think he was probably in his 40s from the way it sounds, like for 40 years, he's been blind, he's been begging, he's been miserable, but hey, no problem, because that allows me to show the glory of God. It sounds really sort of, we don't really like that, but here's the thing I love about Jesus. And here's the thing that I love about being a follower of Jesus, is as he is nailed to the cross, his final words were, Father, forgive them. They don't even know what they're doing. See, Jesus, even in his final moments being tortured for a crime that he did not commit, he didn't, like, even turn the Roman soldiers into villains, and he refused to become a victim. In fact, he said to them, hey, I'm totally choosing this. Like, I could call 10,000 angels. Like, you can't take my life away from me. I'm giving it to you. I'm not a victim. I'm choosing this, and I'm not going to make them villains as I die. And it's just amazing that even in his death, he chose this third path, and guess what? It absolutely worked, because the glory of God, in that moment when every one of his disciples, every one of his friends thought this is the end, it was just the beginning of what you and I, if you're a Christian this morning, are part of this morning. And so I want to spend some time in doing something very sort of ancient. We call it communion. People call it the Lord's Supper. It's a reminder of this moment in time where Jesus laid down his life, where he gave up his life. In fact, this story, this account of Jesus on his last few moments before he was taken, said this, and Jesus took some bread, and he gave thanks for it, and then he broke it in pieces and said, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And in the same way, he took the cup of wine after supper, saying, this cup is a new covenant between God and his people, an agreement confirmed with my blood. Do this in remembrance of me as often as you drink it. For every time you eat this bread and drink this cup, you are announcing the Lord's death until he comes. That's what I want to ask you to do this morning. And I don't think for a moment that just refusing to create victims and villains and just blaming less, as I have urged you to do and as I am trying to do in my life, not super satisfying, not sort of earth-shaking, and I'm not here going, hey, money-back guarantee, you just trust God, and every problem in your life, oh my goodness, it'll turn around, and you'll be so, no. But if you're a Christian this morning, now, if you're not a Christian, we are so welcome to be here, and we are glad that you're here, but there's nothing magic about what we're going to do, and so we asked you just to kind of hang out. The lights are going to stay down. You don't have to feel like, oh, I won't have to be part of that, or people notice. You can just sit there in your seat, even if you don't feel like doing this. But if you've chosen to follow Christ, this thing that we're doing today is a remembrance of just how powerful this simple yet difficult act is to trust God, to put our faith in Him, to sort of make space for miracles and for God to show His power in each of our lives as He did in Jesus and this blind man. Let's pray, and then what I'm going to ask you to do is sort of stand up and move into this middle, and then we'll just sort of come down here, and we've got bread and grape juice, and we'll just split off to the sides. So I'm going to pray with you, and then we'll stand. Dear Jesus, thank you for your sacrifice. God, thank you for sacrificing your son. And God, it's hard to trust you when there don't seem to be any good answers. God, it's difficult to put our faith in you when we go, well, nothing good could come of this. But God, we're just choosing to believe, as you said, that that's when there's space for you to do amazing things. And God, we're gonna choose, instead of blaming, instead of making victims and villains, God, we're going to just look to your example and go, okay, we trust that you could show yourself powerful in this situation where we are powerless. Thank you for your love for us. In your name we pray. Amen. Let's just stand up toward the middle if you'd like to be part of this, and come down and just grab the bread and grab the drink. And you don't have to wait to drink it together if you just kind of want to do that. And then we'll split off to the sides here, and then we'll meet back up here in a little bit.